This is Mike Dolce.
Ian McCall. Jan's Little Evil Pulver.
The Crippler Chris Leavitt. And you're listening to
Talking Brawls.
And we are back to Talking Brawls, Mixed Martial Arts Podcast, with your host, as always, Niall McGrath and Mark Moriarty.
This week on the show, we have Damon Martin talking all things UFC 158. And also yesterday, we caught up with Gegard Mousasi, who was headlining UFC on Fuel TV 9 in Stockholm, Sweden, against Alexander Gustafsson. And also on the show, there's more, as always, you know what I mean, at Talking Brawls we bring it, and we're going to bring it good. Jessica Penne, who is going up against Michelle Waterson, she's defending her atomweight title on April the 5th, I believe it is, in Kansas City, Missouri.
Mark, how is it going, man?
I'm fantastic, Noel. Paddy's Day is taking flow, and apparently there's this Nick Diaz lad who's fighting this weekend against some GSP.
GSP, that's it, Mark, that's it, Mark. And we are not going to beat around the bush today, guys. We're going to get straight to it. We have Damon Martin, formerly of MMAweekly.com, now feature columnist with the Bleacher Report. Damon, first of all, how are you keeping, bro? As always, a pleasure to have you on. And just tell us a little bit about the new gig, first off.
Oh, well, thank you, as always, for having me. It's my pleasure to be here. I appreciate it. New gig is going well. Obviously, Bleacher Report is a fantastic site to work for, making some moves, doing some different things. So I'm a happy man, and I'm geared up for some fights this weekend.
Awesome. We all are here. Damon, tell us a little bit about MMA Weekly Radio. You used to obviously do it with Jeff Kane. Are you going to be doing a new show, or what's the situation with that? Because it was one of my favorite shows, and Mark's as well, I know.
We are going to be coming back, actually. It's been in the plans for a little while now. It's just with the new transition, just trying to get everything up and running. But we will be restarting the radio show sometime in the next few weeks. It is going to be the same format, same guest list. Everything's going to be the same. And I may even actually have Jeff Kane back as my co-host. Bleacher Report and MMA Weekly are actually content partners, so okay, it works out pretty well that we can still work together. So the podcast, the radio show, will be coming back. I promise to keep everybody updated, and I appreciate everyone that's been emailing and Twittering and everything, because you know, I want to be back on the air, and I'm looking forward to coming back in just a few weeks.
Great stuff. We're delighted to hear that. And Damon, okay, let's get to it. UFC 158, obviously, this weekend from the Bell Centre in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. First of all, Damon, we're going to talk about something that's been hugely overlooked, obviously, as we found out and realised in the press conference yesterday. Diaz and GSP talked a lot, but and I think Johnny Hendricks was asked one question, but no one else was asked a question. Carlos Condit and Johnny Hendricks, how much are we looking forward to this fight? It's really been overlooked on this card. What's your expectations and feelings, and are you a little bit disappointed the way the media haven't really, you know, latched onto this fight as much as they should have?
Well, you know, I'm very excited about this fight. And to be honest, I think this is going to be the fight that steals the show. We'll talk about the main event in a little bit, I'm sure, and I'll kind of give you my prediction as to why I'm not picking that to be the great fight. But I think Carlos Condit and Johnny Hendricks are absolutely going to bring it. This truly should be the fight to determine the next number one contender at welterweight. Am I disappointed it didn't get more attention at the press conference? No, because, I mean, listen, you know, the rivalry and the heat between George St. Pierre and Nick Diaz is very real. Nick Diaz is a very, very popular guy with the media. He always says interesting things, and in reality, if you look at the press conference from yesterday, you know, I think George St. Pierre only got asked maybe two or three questions, and he's the star. Nick Diaz was really the guy everyone wanted to talk to, so I don't think it's a bad thing. I think, you know, ultimately, both these guys, Johnny Hendricks and Carlos Condit, are guys who perform. They're not about the talk, they're about the walk, and I think they'll do that tomorrow night.
Damon, when Dana was pushed in the press conference, I think he said that when he was asked, was it a title, was it a number one contender fight, he did make it kind of clear that Carlos Condit was in the, so to speak, Vitor Belfort role here and might have to have one more fight before he'd get a return match. Do you think that's fair, or do you think this should be a straight out number one contenders match?
You know, it's fair in the terms of, you know, he just fought for the title. You know, George St. Pierre, outside of that third round when Condit head kicked him and almost finished him, that was a very close moment. The rest of the fight was you know, a pretty dominant performance from George St. Pierre. Condit definitely had his moments, but, you know, George won the fight. It wasn't an ultra close fight. It wasn't a, you know, 3-2 type score on the rounds. So I'm okay, you know, if George St. Pierre wins and Carlos Condit wins, I'm okay with them making Carlos get one more fight before he would potentially fight GSP again for the title. I'm not a huge fan of immediate rematches unless there's a storyline that goes along with it, like what we have coming up in the heavyweight division with Junior Dos Santos. You know, if he wins, he gets a rematch with Cain Velasquez because he has a win over Cain Velasquez. So it's kind of a little different scenario there. But I don't have a problem with Condit getting one more fight. This fight wasn't even really supposed to happen, so it's kind of a, you know, kind of a weird circumstance that he's even in this position right now.
Exactly, and Carl, it's a very fascinating. It's a fascinating fight stylistically. I think obviously we know Johnny's big power. Condit's a good technical kickboxer, good off his back, etc. What way can you see this fight going, Damon? Because it's a real sort of tough one to call. What way it's going to go?
Well, I tell you, this is a very interesting fight, and I tell you what has concerned me this week has been Johnny Hendricks talking so much about how he doesn't wrestle anymore and he doesn't even use his wrestling. He goes out there looking for the knockout. And while I agree that's really been his game plan over his last few fights, that may be the game plan that backfires against Carlos Condit. Condit is looking for the knockout. Condit's a great kicker. He's really good with his feet. And if you allow him to throw kicks without the danger of a takedown, you're inviting danger. So in a lot of ways, if Johnny Hendricks approaches this fight the way he's approached his last few fights, it could come back to bite him in a big way with the style and the way that Carlos Condit fights. So I'm going to favor Carlos Condit in the fight based on everything I've seen leading into it. But obviously we know Johnny Hendricks, if he does mix things up, if he goes into the clinch, if he works for his dirty boxing and he gets Condit to the ground, that's when it could become his more of his fight. But if he's just looking for that straight left down the pipe, it could be a long night for him.
If you're Johnny Hendricks, Damon, do you take this fight? Carlos Condit is such a dangerous opponent, and Johnny Hendricks must feel slightly wronged not to be the number one contender. And if you're Johnny Hendricks, how much are you looking at that Weidman-Anderson-Silva fight? Because even if he wins, the whole super fight mentality could kick in again, and he could be put to the sidelines again and not get the title fight.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Johnny Hendricks, you got to just keep fighting. You know, he is one of those guys who has learned from others' mistakes. You know, we've seen guys like Rashad Evans sit out and still doesn't get a title shot. We've seen other guys sit out. I mean, Chris Weidman sitting out and still getting the title shot is really rare, you know, these days. Guys usually don't have that happen. Most of the time when they sit out for a year or 6 months or 8 months, something inevitably happens to where they don't actually get the title shot. So I think Johnny's in a good place here. I think he was smart to request Carlos Condit as opposed to facing Jake Ellenberger, because now you have the number one and two guys, and there's no argument if he beats Carlos Condit. There's no denying him the title shot. You could have argued, you know, if Rory McDonald stayed healthy, and let's say he goes out and puts on just a dominant one-sided performance against Carlos Condit, who's to say that the UFC wouldn't try to pit brother against brother and say George St. Pierre fight Rory McDonald? I mean, weirder things have happened. So in a lot of ways, Hendricks is smart doing what he's doing, picking the fight he picked. And, you know, ultimately, you know, there's no title shot until he gets a contract. So you just keep fighting, keep making paychecks, and hope you get that title shot.
So, Damon, what is your prediction and method of victory for this fight? What way do you think it's going to go?
I'm actually going to go with Carlos Condit by knockout, and I'm going to go in the third round. I love Johnny Hendricks. I'm a big, big fan of his, but, you know, his style of late with his, you know, kind of one-hit-quit style of throwing that left down the pipe, is it dangerous? Absolutely. But the way that Condit throws his knees and the way that Condit throws his kicks, he's got a nasty front, straight front kick that, you know, we've seen him land it on Nick Diaz. We saw him land it on Rory McDonald. He's landed on a lot of guys, and that length and that reach could give Johnny problems. So I'm actually going to predict Carlos Condit catches him, clips him, and finishes him in the third round.
Great stuff, Damon. And Damon, obviously moving on to the other fight that the guys weren't at all talked to yesterday in the press conference, Nate Marquardt versus Jake Ellenberger. What sort of position is either one of these guys in the welterweight division if they win tomorrow night? Will they be sort of top 3-4 contender in the division?
Absolutely, especially for Jake Ellenberger. I mean, Jake Ellenberger's in a really good spot here, because if he beats Nate Marquardt, you know, arguably, if Carlos Condit wins, you know, he could fight Condit. They had an epic fight a few years ago that Ellenberger actually took on a month's notice. Or he could, you know, maybe he's the one that fights Rory McDonald. I mean, there's a couple different fights out there that could put him right into a spot of being a number one contender. So Jake Ellenberger's in a prime spot. Nate Marquardt, not so much. I mean, Nate Marquardt's coming off a loss where it was a pretty dominant, you know, loss to Tarek Saffiedine. I think Nate, if he beats Jake Ellenberger, it puts him in the top 10, and then it positions him for a bigger fight, whether it's a Rory McDonald, a Carlos Condit, a Nick Diaz, depending on what happens in the main event. You know, it positions him for one of those style fights, maybe a rematch at welterweight, Martin Kampman. So there's a lot of different options out there for him, you know, should he win. But I wouldn't put him in that top five or six category yet. Jake Ellenberger, absolutely.
What can we expect from Nate Marquardt? Because his last sort of three or four fights, Damon, he's been, you know, really good against Woodley, and then he was, you know, very lackluster against Tarek Saffiedine. And obviously, we know he's off the TURT now. Maybe are you sort of thinking that the UFC could have possibly put someone else in that fight instead of Nate Marquardt?
Well, you know, the thing is, Nate Marquardt's still a big name. You know, he's a well-known fighter. He's a big name. And at the time, you know, the guys that were willing to step in and take that fight, you know, guys like Tyron Woodley, and I love Tyron. He's coming off a big win. Yeah. But, you know, he's still not a marquee name. And, you know, one fight ago, he did get knocked out flat by Nate Marquardt. So, you know, Marquardt's got name value. People know him in the UFC. I mean, let's not forget it was, you know, a year and a half, 2 years ago, he was headlining a UFC card when he got booted. So it's not like he's not still well-known. So he's the guy. He's the right guy for this spot. But this is a tough spot for Nate because he admitted in his last fight that he overlooked Tarek Saffiedine. And I hate to hear any fighter say that, but I especially hate to hear a fighter with Nate Marquardt's experience inside the cage say that, because that to me, and I know this is going to sound harsh, but that to me shows a little bit of mental weakness when you're that level of fighter, when you're that close. I mean, Nate Marquardt with a win there could have been coming in, and he could have been the one fighting Carlos Condit, or he could have been the one fighting Johnny Hendricks right now and arguably be fighting for a title shot. But he said he overlooked Tarek Saffiedine. That to me really, really, really did not sound good.
Amazing. Yeah, Damon, moving on to the main event, George St. Pierre versus Nick Diaz. How do you feel that the UFC has promoted this? And do you feel that the lack of the prime time to follow them around and Nick not turning up for the interviews and that, do you think that this is still, they've promoted it well enough, and the fact that the general public haven't seen the press conference, which was ecstatic, and it was better than the prime time, the countdown show. Do you think that the UFC have done a good enough job promoting this this pay-per-view?
Nick Diaz.
I do. Listen, George St. Pierre is a star. He's a guy who could show up and fight anybody, and he's going to draw a crowd. You know, when George St. Pierre performs, you're guaranteed to probably get about 700,000 pay-per-view buys, which is by far the best in the company. Generally, guys, you know, when we see those kind of buys in other fights, it takes a John Jones, Rashad Evans type rivalry, you know, to get that high in pay-per-view buys, to get to where George St. Pierre gets with any fight. I mean, you put him in there with anybody, and George draws that. Then you throw in the element of Nick Diaz being the kind of the bad boy, you know, the Stockton bad boy, this, you know, bad guy, this villain who's coming in and just kind of rattling GSP's cage. And, you know, I've heard more interviews this week. I've heard more people just hyped about this rivalry. I mean, we saw a lot of coverage from the mainstream media when Ronda Rousey fought, but with this fight, it's a different element, because in this fight, you really feel like you're going to get a fight. You're going to get a rivalry. You're going to get two guys who genuinely do not like each other, and that always makes it sell. So think about it right off the bat. George St. Pierre automatically draws 700,000. How much more will he draw with a rivalry like with Nick Diaz? So I think they've done a good job.
Is George actually rattled? Because I've put forward the theory to a lot of people now over the last week that George just, he seems so smart about this, and he knows that he's going to make more money if he looks like he's being rattled by Nick's onslaught of abuse during the press conference. Is he actually rattled, or is he playing it up until he gets in the cage, and is he going to turn it on and win a standardized GSP win over the five rounds?
I'd say it's a bit of both, and let me explain. I would say, is he really rattled? Has Diaz actually gotten to GSP? Yeah, in some ways I think he has, because, you know, all these different things have led up to this, from the trash talk in the cage, the night when he beat BJ Penn, up to, you know, the comments he's made in the countdown show, to the media conference call where he called him pampered, and, you know, he said he doesn't even live his own life, and then to the press conference where, like I said, I mean, it's in GSP City, it's in his hometown, and GSP got maybe two questions, and I think the questions that came into George, if I remember correctly, were from the French-Canadian media. So, I mean, that's got to play in your mind when you're the star, you're the champion, and no one's even talking to you. They're talking to your opponent, and he's saying all this crazy nonsense. So my answer is twofold. Did he get under George's skin? Is George rattled? Yes. But the problem is when the fight comes, when the cage door closes, you can't rattle that guy. You cannot take him out of his game. He is a cerebral, just a smart fighter. He knows better. You're never going to get George so emotionally invested in a fight to where it's going to take him out of his game plan. So, yes, I believe he's rattled right now. No, I do not believe it'll affect him in the fight.
And Damon, I personally think it's part of you know, Diaz's game plan to do this, to rattle GSP, and a lot of people obviously would agree with that. Do you think he's trying to lure him into a dogfight, like a stand-up sort of war, so GSP will stay on his feet so he can outbox him on his feet and, you know, throw those combos and look for that KO?
Absolutely. I mean, listen, Nick Diaz is a smart fighter. It's just like when he talks inside the cage. You know, when he puts down his hands and he wags his jaw and he starts calling people names, and, you know, like when he said the stuff to Carlos Condit in the cage, that's just part of who Diaz is. He tries to draw you into a fight. Now, I know mixed martial arts is a fight, but I mean like a literal fight, like a literal bar fight is what he's trying to draw you into, because that's his fight. He is the master of that. If he draws you into his game, Diaz is next to unbeatable. Carlos Condit already showed the blueprint of how not to do that. Carlos just, it was almost like he was wearing earplugs. He just ignored it and stuck to his game plan, and he won the fight. I think George will do the exact same thing here. But, like I said, if he can goad him into a stand-up fight, if he can goad him into not looking for the takedown, into not shooting and try to stand out there and jab with him, it becomes Nick Diaz's fight. I just don't think that will happen.
Do we think George, obviously we know he's huge mental strength, but I've never seen GSP as unnerved as he was yesterday in the press conference. He was, like, you know, sort of turning around talking to Carlos Condit, if you look back at it again. Can we really expect GSP, is there a first time for sort of, you know, obviously there is a first time for everything, but can we really expect to see, you know, GSP hold that nerve with all what has been said by Nick Diaz in lead up to the fight?
Well, you know, listen, George, you know, George has shown, you know, some a slight, and I do mean slight, crack in the armor this week. You know, normally he's just, you know, the model of professionalism when it comes to interviews. He's never off his game. He gives very prescribed answers, and I'm not saying that as an insult. I'm saying he knows how to play the game. If I ask him a question and five interviews later someone asks him a similar question, chances are you're going to get the same response. That's just how he is. But it seems like, you know, he's been rattled a little bit, you know, when Nick Bisbee opened workouts and he said, you know, enough's enough, I'm showing up for this stuff, and he's not. And, you know, it just seems like, yes, you know, GSP's a little fed up, because GSP is always the guy on the marquee. He's always the guy expected to sell the fight. And at least his other guy shows up. You know, when he fought Carlos Condit, at least Carlos was there. Whether he was getting questions or not, he was right there front and center. You know, the same thing with all his past opponents. But the fact that Diaz blows this stuff off, and then when he does show up, instead of punishing him and, you know, kind of being like, we don't want to talk to you because you shunned us, no one pays attention to George at that point. They only pay attention to Nick Diaz. So, yeah, that's got to bug him a little bit.
Damon, this question's twofold. First of all, who's a better hyper of the fight, an unknowing Nick Diaz or Chael Sonnen? And second of all, if you're Dana White and that fight's going into the fourth round and you see that GSP's in trouble, do you jump into the cage and try and stop him? Because what in God's name is the UFC going to do if the craziness of a Nick Diaz title run is confronted?
Well, you know, I tell you what, Nick Diaz, I mean, listen, I mean, Nick Diaz has been a champion before. He was a champion in Strikeforce, and, you know, the thing about Nick Diaz, he walks to the beat of his own drum, and I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily, and I think in a lot of ways people would celebrate a guy like him being champion because he's unconventional. He doesn't, you know, he kind of bucks authority. You know, he's not the company man. George St. Pierre is the ultimate company man. So it's kind of a weird situation. If Nick wins, the whole welterweight division is turned on its head. You know, Carlos Condit has to be the biggest Nick Diaz fan ever right now, because if he wins and Diaz wins, you know that's going to be a rematch they'd make. So I don't think it's a bad thing. I mean, you know, Dana has said that if Diaz wins, he's going to have a quote unquote, you know, come to Jesus meeting where they're going to sit down and have a very long conversation about his obligations as champion. But listen, Nick's going to be Nick. I think Nick plays the game just enough to get by, and I don't think you're ever going to change him from that.
And Damon, if Nick Diaz was to win the world title tomorrow night, do we not think it possibly could be a good thing for not just the welterweight division, but all the divisions? Because obviously we know the featherweight division has been basically put on hold with the super fight at the moment.
You know, the super fight thing, and I said this earlier this week, I think the super fight thing needs to go away because I think we've all determined it's definitely not going to happen. If they wanted a super fight to happen, they would have held out Anderson Silva from fighting Chris Weidman in July.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different scenarios where these fights could have happened and they haven't happened. So, you know, listen, you keep rolling with what you got. And you know, even, you know, leading into this fight, you know, 3 months ago, I said I didn't agree with Nick Diaz getting the fight because, you know, he's coming off a loss, he's coming off a suspension. I mean, what are you rewarding a guy like Johnny Hendricks who goes out there and knocks people out and clearly defines himself as the number one guy and he still can't get a title shot? But here we are 24 hours away, and I'm excited, man.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I'm amped up.
Definitely.
I want to see this fight. I'm about to start yelling, what 209 where you at, George? it's paid off.
My
they were
side.
Right. The UFC, once again, was right. We've all bought into it. So, you know, let's just sit back and enjoy it.
Exactly.
Damon, you have $100 in your hand, and you're going into the bookmakers. You see that Nick Diaz is 5-1. What are you thinking? Like, where does this fight, how does this fight finish?
Well, you know, listen, at the end of the day, I go back to my earlier answer about rattling George St. Pierre. Do I believe he's in George's head? Yes. Do I believe George is legitimately rattled and probably legitimately a little ticked off? Yes. It won't matter in the fight, though. George is a master of what he does. BJ Penn literally told George, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you inside the cage. And it didn't affect him. All it really did was make George go out there and beat him that much harder on the ground. Diaz's game is very straightforward, and it works if you allow him to work it. I don't think that's going to be the case here. I think George is going to take him down repeatedly. The unfortunate side about this fight is as much hype as there's been, as much anticipation as there is currently, I don't think the fight will live up to the hype because I think George will go out and do what George does. And I think in a way, it's going to be a little detrimental because I think some people will turn on him a little bit because I think people want to see a fight. They want to see him go out there and, you know, really put the beat down on Diaz. And I don't think he can do that because of the way Diaz fights, and Diaz is so tough and so durable that I don't think he could really, really put Diaz in those dangerous positions. And so at the end of the fight, George may actually come out looking a little bit of the bad guy if he goes out and operates his normal game plan.
Awesome stuff, Damon. Damon, obviously we've Nick Ring, Chris Camozzi, and Mike Ricci and Colin Fletcher also on the card. What other fights really stand out for you on the card? Obviously we have Darren Cruikshank, who's coming off an unbelievable win against Henry Martinez. Darren Elkins obviously can extend his streak to 5. What other fights are you looking at to be potential barn burners on the night?
Well, I tell you, the one fight that I think everyone should keep an eye on is the main event for the prelim portion of the show, and that's Patrick Cote and Bobby Volker. That is a great fight. Patrick Cote looked shredded at 170 pounds, his first time at welterweight. I had a chance to talk to Patrick back when he made the decision to make the drop, and he said it's something he's been thinking about doing for a while, and he looked great. He looked shredded. And then to that point, Bobby Volker has got to be one of the most underrated guys not being talked about, but this guy is a serious puncher. He's got great power. He's a very durable guy. He's been around there, and he's faced a guy by the name of Roger Bowling in Strikeforce, who is similar in a lot of ways to Patrick Cote, a big, big power puncher, big powerful guy with power puncher, and Volker beat him, I think, 3 times, you know, basically. So Volker knows what it's like to stand in there with a big, you know, heavy puncher like a Patrick Cote. That, to me, is the fight everyone needs to keep an eye on. Another one to keep an eye on in the prelims is the fight between John McDessie and Darren Cruikshank, because Darren, with that head kick knockout in his last fight, nasty. We've seen McDessie with his spinning back fist knockout of Kyle Watson. So these guys are flashy. They like to throw a few things. Obviously, a lot of times these fights don't pay off. We thought McDessie and Sam Stout was going to be the same way, and that fight really wasn't that great. But on paper, Cruikshank and McDessie has a lot of potential as well.
It tends to be the case, I suppose, when the eyes aren't on the undercard, that it usually lives up to the underhype and actually ends up being fantastic. But Damon, we haven't actually spoken to you since this season of Tough started, and since the Chael and that Jones lad started on it. Have you been suckered in? Because you were a big critic beforehand, and have you been suckered back into it again?
I have been drawn back in a little bit. I admitted that I was not a big fan of the last few seasons.
None of
the show.
Us were.
They really lost me. I mean, the format was stale. It was old. And the thing is the format has stayed the same. I mean, they didn't change anything. They didn't reinvent the wheel. And you know, my suggestion for years has been, let them out of the house. Let these guys go out into Vegas, and if they're going to act like, you know, crazy idiots, you know, get it out of the way now before they get in the UFC. But I think the way they filmed it this year, with what I've been calling kind of a documentary style format, that UFC primetime feel to every episode, has really drawn me in more. The fights have been great. I think the talent level is a lot higher on this season. I've really enjoyed the coaching from both Chael Sonnen and John Jones. So, yeah, am I addicted again the way I was, you know, when it first started? Maybe not to that level, but I am way more interested now than I have been in probably, you know, 4 or 5 seasons. I mean, the last season I was really into was essentially the season they did the bantamweights and featherweights, but that was more based on the talent and the cast. It had nothing to do with the actual show itself. It just, there was so much talent on that cast that I enjoyed watching it. But as far as a show that compelled me to watch beyond the fights and the fighters, you know, it's probably been since maybe season 8 since that's happened.
Mark, I think everyone's been signed.
Yes,
from
16 fighters signed.
16 fighters, because there was a fight announced today for UFC on Fuel TV. Tor Trung and Adam Sella has been added to UFC on Fuel TV. Do you know anything about that, Damon? Is that true that all the guys have been signed from the series?
Yes. Absolutely. All 14 fighters from The Ultimate Fighter will get at least one more fight in the UFC. They may only get one fight, but they all get at least one more fight in the UFC. Now, you can see right away with the matchmaking, you know, matching up Thor and Adam Sella, that the loser will probably not be brought back. That'll probably mean the end of whoever doesn't make it out of that fight. But every fighter on that card, 14 fighters, they will all get at least one fight in the UFC.
Brilliant.
Are we seeing a new age of, because obviously with some of the big cuts that were made recently of John Fitch and some of the lads there who were on big, big contracts. And are we seeing now that they're obviously getting these guys on, paying them less and smaller win bonuses? Is this a better model for the UFC to be working on?
You know, I don't think it's necessarily, you know, paying them less. And I know the John Fitch thing has been brought up a million times, but I didn't agree with John Fitch being released. Yeah. But at the same time, even though I don't like it and I don't agree with it, I get it. Because John Fitch is a guy who was going to make, you know, they talked about expensive fighters, and everyone said, well, how is expensive? He's making 60 grand to fight, 60 grand to win, so 120 grand. But the problem is, and what comes in with a guy like John Fitch is, coming into the sport, or coming into his next fight, he would have been 1-2-1 in his last 4. You would have been paying him potentially $120,000 to win if he wins his fight, and chances are he would have been on the prelims. I mean, he's just not a guy who traditionally has ultra-exciting fights. The records speak against that. So coming off that Damian Maia fight, which was a bad fight, I mean, it wasn't a great fight. Maia dominated, but it wasn't an ultra-exciting fight. You got to imagine Fitch is going to the prelims, and it's tough when you're paying a guy $120,000 to fight on FX or $120,000 to fight on Fuel or even you know, Facebook. So even though I don't agree with it, I get it.
And I suppose MMA fans will never be satisfied, and if all of the people who were outraged on Twitter when John Fitch was dropped, most of those were the same people who were outraged at his boring fight style when he was at the top of the card. So, well, if it's your money, what would you do? And that's what they did.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that's exactly a point, a brilliant point right there, is a lot of the people that I saw complaining, I'm wondering, where were these people at when Fitch fought?
Yes.
You know, where were these people, you know, clamoring to say, I want to see Fitch in the main event, or I want to see Fitch in title fights? Because, listen, I'll tell you this right now. The Twitter world, the social networking world, I won't say it runs the UFC, but they definitely listen to it. I mean, listen, the fans really do influence the UFC's decision making on Twitter and things like this. And if fans are so rabid for John Fitch when he was fighting there, I don't think he would have gotten cut. I really don't. But, I mean, the outpouring was great, and I think it's amazing. And I had a chance to talk to John earlier this week, and he was really, really happy that the fans came out and supported him. But, again, the point you made is exactly that. Where were they when he was fighting?
Yeah.
Awesome stuff, Damon. Damon, just one more question before we wrap it up, and thanks a million again, always, for your time. Conor McGregor, are you looking forward to the fight in Sweden?
I am absolutely looking forward to that fight, and I'll tell you ahead of time, I talked about the fights that I think are going to steal the show at 158. The fight with Conor McGregor coming up at the Sweden card against Marcus Brimage, that will, I'll tell you right now, that is going to be a show stealer. Those guys are both flashy. They're knockout artists. That's going to be a fun fight. I've known Marcus for a while. He was actually on my radio show as our, what we used to have, Ultimate Fighter correspondents. We had a fighter from the show on every year, and Marcus was our fighter from that season. Hilarious dude. He's a hilarious
he's
guy.
Such a cool dude.
And Conor, of course, you know, Irish pride as it is, obviously, and he's a phenomenal fighter. I cannot wait. I think that fight has the absolute great chance of stealing the show in Sweden.
We'd Marcus on last week. Absolutely top guy. Really, really good dude. Damon, listen, just before we go, shotgun to the head. Just go through the three main fights on the main card. GSP, Diaz.
I got to go with GSP by decision.
Okay. Condit Hendricks.
I'm going to go with Condit by knockout.
Okay. And Jake Ellenberger and Nate Marquardt.
I'm going to go with Jake Ellenberger by decision.
Okay. And then you mentioned Patrick Cote and Bobby Volker.
I'm gonna pick the upset here. I'm gonna go with Bobby Volker. As much as that's gonna surprise the people, I think he's an underrated guy. So I'm actually gonna go with Volker by decision in a show stealing performance.
Good stuff. And John McDessie versus Darren Krejcik.
I'm leaning towards McDessie. I think he's a little more well rounded, and he does have the ability to slow down the fight if he wants to. So I'm gonna stick with my gut and go with McDessie.
And Damon, I believe you owe me a pint from the Marco and Stephens True fight.
We had
a little bet.
I do. I owe you a couple at this point, I think, because you called that one right down the middle, and boy, did I get that one wrong. And I'm sure Stephens True's jaw would agree with you.
Damon, you're an absolute gentleman. It's been a pleasure as always, and thanks again for your time. And Damon, where can the guys check you out? Just let them know.
Follow me on Twitter at Damon Martin, and then just check out bleacherreport.com/UFC or /MMA. All my stuff is over there reading on a daily basis. And again, it's always a pleasure to join you guys. Thank you for having me.
Plans for Paddy's Day, Damon?
My plans for Paddy's Day are always the same. Drink some Guinness, and hopefully I don't remember what happened the next morning.
Good stuff. Words no better
damn
said.
Right.
Good man, Damon. Listen, been a pleasure as always. Thanks, mate.
Thank you. Talk to you guys soon.
Happy Paddy's Day. Cheers, Damon.
You as well.
And Mark, we are back. That was Damon Martin of the Bleacher Report, formerly of MMAweekly.com. Top man as always. Thanks a million for Damon. Can't speak high enough, Damon. Absolute gentleman. Mark, how excited are you for this weekend? I cannot wait for tomorrow night.
I feel enlightened by us having that beautiful 30 minutes with Damon there, because now I know there's not just one fight happening this weekend, because I'd almost forgotten. I watched the press conference three times. Once to watch Diaz's face and GSP's face, and then another time to watch Condit's face, because Condit's face is just amazing.
We mentioned it earlier on to Damon.
It's unbelievable. And then Hendricks is just sitting there hiding in his beard because he's just chilled, you know. It's cool,
funny stuff, but yet very serious at the same time. One of those you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Well, no, we have a disagreement on this. You're pretty sure GSP's rattled. I'm thinking he's not as much as he's letting on. I'm going a bit more with Damon on this. How do you see this fight going yourself?
I see this fight going. I've never seen GSP this rattled. It's built up a whole year and a half. Sorry, what, 13 months? Yeah, not a year and a half, 13 months.
Yeah, 13 months.
So I see this going. I think he's really on his skin. Yes, as I said to Damon there earlier on, you know, we looked at Condit's reaction. He was laughing. GSP kept turning to Condit, red face, shaking his head. Actually, physically looked like he was just wanted to get out of the seat and punch Diaz. And that's what Diaz is trying to do. He's trying to suck him into a dogfight. So he'll try and stand and bag him, want to punch him, not take him down, just lose control of his mind where he's not focused on the fight. And I think Diaz has done a pretty good job so far, and I actually think we could have a new champion tomorrow night.
Okay, and how do you think it's going to finish? If
it does finish
that way,
it'll be a TKO up against the cage with Diaz's punches landing down them, combinations, ones, twos. Obviously, we know GSP's a great job, and he's a probably the best wrestler in mixed martial arts today. But I just have this sneaky feeling we have a new champ. I just think I've never seen GSP this irritated, and I think it's going to seriously affect his mind tomorrow. And you know, a lot of GSP's, you know, past has been, you know, determined by how, you know, psychologically good he has been going at these fights. And I think I've never seen GSP this rattled before. I'm quite excited for tomorrow.
Well, can we go back to the press conference when that classic moment when Diaz just brought up the marijuana metabolites question again and kind of went, well, you know, I'm not going to destroy accents here because it's not going to work.
I'm in a dark place.
He's in a dark place. But he got you try testing George. You know, kind of George is going to see if he tests him for drugs.
Exactly.
And there is a kind of a thing that when Diaz is making cracking wise about testing positively for marijuana again, like, I would be shitting myself if I was Dana White at the moment, thinking that could be the representation going on Fox television to the new mainstream UFC fans. Jesus, what are they going to do if he wins? I know he's 5-1, but that's because the market's skewed at the moment.
Well, listen, Nick is a lot smarter than people give him credit for. I think, you know, he could be doing this, you know, obviously he believes he's going to win the title tomorrow night, and I think he could be doing this to, you know, he's made himself a lot more marketable this week already from what he's done, from not showing up. You know, as I say,
that's what we said before.
Bad publicity is publicity. You know what I mean?
If he turned publicity. If he turned up at the open workouts, Niall, it would have been far worse. Him not turning up at the open workouts
has built his fight up more.
Yeah.
So the UFC are probably thankful in some ways to him.
Absolutely.
For not showing up.
Him acting, you have to act like Nick Diaz if you're going to be Nick Diaz. He is better than Chael Sonnen at hyping a fight in the fact that to throw back to a kind of an old George Costanza-ism, it's not lying if you believe it. And Nick Diaz genuinely believes all of the craziness that he spouts. It may be a lot of it, like absolute lunacy.
I think there's a little bit of business behind it as well. I
hope there is.
It'd be great to see. But listen, Mark, what's your take on the fight, brother? Who are you going for?
I'm going GSP, five rounds, winning GSP style. I think that GSP is smarter than Nick Diaz, and I think that although Nick Diaz is playing a fantastic game here, I heard it and I've talked with a number of people about this over the last few days, that I think that GSP is putting up a front. He understands that he's earning more money the more kind of rattled he looks in the press conferences, and the more he's putting up a front, he understands that if it looks like he's showing vulnerability mentally, that more people are going to buy the pay-per-view. And I think he's smarter than this, and he understands that if he goes in like normal GSP and giving his usual sound bites and snippets, it'll do well. He's in Canada, he's in his hometown, this is fantastic. But this is a new GSP. He understands that people want to see another side of him. He might have to be the bad guy. A lot of people are turning to Nick Diaz. Like, a lot of the Canadians are supporting Nick Diaz in this. He's becoming a more endearing character. But I think it's going to finish decision GSP. It's going to be pretty dull. I think the Hendricks-Conlett fight is going to be the one that steals the show, like yourself. I think it's going to be a bit of a classic GSP fight.
No, I like the Conlett-Hendricks fight. We'll talk about it in a second, obviously, but I think this fight possibly could steal, and I'm going against what Dame was saying earlier on. Yeah, I do. I've a certain feeling. I think Diaz is going to prove a point.
Well, if Diaz dictates it, it will.
And listen, you could slate me all you want, guys, and you can slate me all you want on at Talking Brawls on Twitter.
It's at Niall McGrath
4 and at Martin Warrior 101, and you can catch us on Facebook, facebook.com/ Talking Brawls Mixed Martial Arts
Podcast. That was like water, Niall. That was like water.
Walking on water, brother. Like water, Anderson Silva. Check it out. Good documentary as well. Boom. Listen, no, but I'm going to, you know, the reason why I'm saying this is because I think, as I've mentioned with Damon there a few minutes ago, I think he sucked him in. I've never seen him this angry, pissed off. And I just think Diaz has this fire inside him that we're going to see something pretty special tomorrow night. And I can see it being an absolute slobber knocker. I think GSP is going to, I think he's just going to lose the rag at one stage. Diaz is going to talk to him during the fight, get underneath him like he has. And I can see Diaz win this. I reckon
fourth round.
Championship round. I'm going to TKO up against the defense. I'm envisioning at the moment, seeing, you know, left, long left jab, punch the body to the face, a combination. He's going to put him down. And I just, I don't know why, it's just been ringing in my head for the last 2 weeks, three weeks.
Okay, no, well then, Party Booker here, is going to be Hendricks or Condit then? Because is Hendricks going to get that shot that he wants?
I think he might fall a little bit short. I think it's a really fantastic stylistic matchup. I'm just worried that he'll throw that left hand again and Condit could get knocked in his arse. But
he's a track record.
You know, I'm going with my head over my heart here, and I'm a big Carlos Condit fan, and I know he's a great, you know, he's so good off his back, and he, you know, he's a great kick, great kicks, great combinations as well, as we said. But I'm going to go with Condit, actually. I am. I'm changing my mind the whole time. I'm going
to
go with Condit.
It's hard to call.
It's a really tough fight to call. I still can't. I'll probably change my mind tomorrow and go with Hendricks.
How did you see it? Finishing?
If it is going to finish, Hendricks is going to win. Right, this is where I'm
going to
put it.
Okay, that's fair, right? I understand what you're going.
If it is going to finish, it's Hendricks win. If it goes the distance, it's going to be Condit's, because he'll pick away at him and beat
keep
him
his
like
range.
He did, keep his range, not get too, you know, pick and go like he did against Diaz.
Yeah,
but Hendricks is obviously, I think, going to, you know, try and use his wrestling more, takedowns like GSP did a lot against Condit. And that left hand is always there as well. So I think Condit by decision.
Yeah, it's hard when someone who has been classified as a one-trick pony for KOs, who also has that collegiate wrestling background and is actually telling everyone in interviews that his jiu-jitsu and his wrestling is a class above
his wrestling
hands.
Is awesome.
No, I know his wrestling is awesome, but his MMA, he's saying that his MMA wrestling and his jiu-jitsu, when he's taken to the ground, he's saying he's better than he is with his hands standing up.
Okay.
And it's a bold statement to make. And I suppose when the guy who... there's a certain part of me that must have been thinking that after he knocked out, he KO'd Campen, he must have been thinking, oh, fuck, I didn't get to show off the rest of my game, because now, no, everyone's still calling him this fluke knockout.
Well, that's
artist.
Probably, he didn't get the title shot. Yeah. If the fight had been more dramatic and had went on a bit longer, and we would have seen that finish probably in a lot of rounds, it would seem to be like controversy, etc. He probably could have got a title shot, but it's just been so straightforward and easy his
absolutely.
Last two fights. But
well,
let's
I'm just to finish my prediction on this. I think the MMA gods are absolute bastards, and I'm 95% certain that Condit is going to take this by decision.
I'm going
heart over decision. I don't care. I'm not. The MMA gods are wrong, and Hendricks is going to. He's going to do it. He's going to knock him out in the second. You know, he's going to knock him out in the first round. 30 seconds in.
That's what I'm saying. I really do believe that if it is going to finish, it will finish in the first minute, and it will be a Hendricks win.
And he won't get the title fight, because he's knocked him out as well. He won't get the title fight. He'll go to super fight then.
Koscheck will get one coming off a loss or something. Do you know what I mean? To Robbie Lawler. But listen,
will we rock the interview first?
What are you talking about?
There's another fight on this card?
Yeah.
Ellen
Berger versus Berger? Mark Court.
Oh, God.
You know, it is obviously, we know, you know, Nate's, the whole thing's been messed up.
Nate the Great.
As we know. Mark, what way do you see this fight going? I think it's just going one way. I can see an Ellenberger knockout in the first, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I like the countdown show, sorry, the primetime show, which they kind of managed to magically evaporate the concept of Tariq Safadin ever existing in Nate the Great Markart's career, and the brutal leg kicks that were handed out to him. I think Ellenberger's got this in the first round. I hope so. I think Nate's he's a big name, and as Damon said, he's a name which will still draw on pay-per-view
of course,
with old school UFC fans.
But he's
and
not.
That's why he's got this fight. I know you posed that question to him.
He's not the fighter he was at all. You know, you see a little bit. Obviously, we saw against Woodley, crazy good performance, one of the fights of the year.
Yeah,
and then you get the performance against Safadin, lackluster. You know, didn't really want to be there. Looked uninterested, and you don't know what you're going to get anymore. I think Jake Ellenberger, you know, he's too good of a striker and too good of a performer and a mixed martial artist to.
Let's go with Ellenberger just because we want him to win. Because
it's Mark. Mark Ward, as Damon said, doubted himself.
Yeah.
Against Safadin, so. That's where I'm going. Mentally, he's not good, and I don't think physically, you know, he's getting a bit older. He's 34 years of age now, and I've just Ellenberger written all over this fight.
It's proof that they can sell you anything, though, when you see that, like, them actually putting it into the Countdown show, you know, kind of, and trying to build this up as, you know, Nate having kind of a chance in this fight. I think Ellenberger has this written all over
definitely.
Him. I hope to God, if there's any belief in God, or definitely. All the MMA fighters believe in
and
God.
We'll just give a few shotgun predictions now on the rest of the card. Nick Ring and Chris Camozzi, Mark.
Haven't really thought about it.
Nick Ring. I got Nick Ring as well. Nick Ring by decision for me.
I only knew Nick Diaz was fighting against GSP. I wasn't even paying attention to any of the rest of it. I just saw Carlos Condit on the stage at the presser. That was it.
Mike Ricci and Colin Fletcher.
Colin Fletcher.
I'm going to go with Mike Ricci by TKO in the second. Patrick Cote and Bobby Volker.
Patrick Cote.
I'm going with Bobby Volker. As Damon said, I've checked him out in Strikeforce a couple of times. This guy is good. And I think Cote, as Damon said, he looked ripped. But, you know, I think Volker's going to go out and, you know, hell for leather and could be a bit of a barn burner. Cruikshank and Macadesi.
Cruikshank.
I'm going with Cruikshank as well. Damon didn't, actually. But I was surprised with that. He went with Macadesi. I think Cruikshank, he is right. Macadesi is a better all-round fighter, but that head kick.
It's still in my head. It's still there.
It's crazy. And
I gave it a knockout of the year.
Rick Story and Quinn Merle Hearn. I'm going to go with Rick Story.
As I said, I only knew there was a main event.
So, Mark, did you enjoy Cheltenham this week, brother?
I didn't. I'm not one for the horses, Niall, because I don't really like losing money.
What day was Ladies' Day? Thursday? Is it Thursday or the Wednesday?
I don't know.
And speaking of ladies.
Oh, boom!
I want nothing this week in Cheltenham.
Jesus
But listen,
Christ.
We're looking forward to Paddy's Day. And
you give me a heads up on that. That was a fantastic link, Niall. Well done.
But, we're looking forward to Paddy's Day, obviously, greatly here this weekend. Big rugby match tomorrow against Italy and Rome, the conclusion of the Six Nations, etc. But as always, we love our, you know, Invicta Fighting Championships here on Talking Brawls. And we've caught up with, you know, Shannon Knapp in the past, Beck Hyatt, and more recently Laura Sanko. Laura Sanko was absolutely hilarious, good old fun on the show.
But this is our first champion.
This is our first, and we've had Misha Tate on as well. This is our first
reigning
women's champion. We caught up with
Atomweight
champion Jessica Penny as she goes into battle against Michelle the Karate Hottie Waterson at Invicta Championships 5.
That's April 5th.
On April the 5th in Kansas City. And it was, you know, good chat we had with Jessica ahead of her fight, and a real pleasure to catch up, and a great honour for us to have our first champion on the show. So let's go to the interview, guys, and you can listen to what Jessica has to say, and we will catch you in a few minutes time. Love yous and leave yous. Thanks, cheers.
This is Pablo Garza and you're listening to Talking Brawl.
So I'd say we're joined on the line by Jessica Penne, who goes up against Michelle Waterson at Invicta Fighting Championships 5 in Kansas City, Missouri on April the 5th of next month. Jessica, first of all, how are things with you? Thanks a million for the time.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Jessica, obviously this fight, you're defending your Atomweight title for the first time. How much are you looking forward to this fight, and what are the expectations going into the fight?
I mean, I'm always excited to fight. It's been a long road of, you know, not having any certainty with opponents and not knowing, you know, when a fight's going to come. So I'm happy that I have some consistency. I'm excited about the matchup. I think it's going to be a good fight.
And awesome. How's the camp going? And is there anything you're working on ahead of the fight in particular?
No, you know, I train all the time, even when I don't have a fight. So a lot of my free time is getting better and trying to become more well-rounded and working on myself, becoming a better fighter and a more well-rounded athlete. So, I'm just going into the fight, no expectations, and just ready to have fun.
There seems to be a real buzz about Invicta at the moment. This is going to be the second ever online web pay-per-view. Is there a different feeling now, being a female professional mixed martial artist now around Invicta? Is there a buzz in the air with the whole UFC connection, Ronda, and people moving over back and forth between the organizations? What's it feel like now to be at the top of the game?
I mean, it's been a lot of hard work, and I'm thankful to Invicta for giving me the opportunity and all the other females the opportunity to have a platform to compete on. It's caused a lot of attention with Liz and Ronda's fight, brought a lot of notice to women's MMA, and, you know, they put on a great show, they fought hard, and they just did really well in showing everybody what women's MMA is about. So it's created a little bit of buzz all around for everybody.
And Jessica, are you still working now with Mark Munoz ahead of the fight?
Yeah, I always work with Mark. He's my main coach, and he's always there for me.
And is there a feeling now? You started a long time ago now, and you're at that stage of your career where you're a champion. Do you want them to open an atomweight division in the UFC, and how far down the line do you think that could be?
You know, I'm happy with where I'm at. I never thought that, you know, it would be possible to fight for a title. Honestly, I never thought that there would be a legit women's organization. So I take everything as it comes, and I'm happy where I'm at. If you know, the UFC wants to open up other divisions one day, that would be great, instead of just focusing on one. There are a lot of great athletes in every single weight class, and I think, you know, everybody would be happy and thankful to see them fight on a main stage like the UFC. But until then, we have Invicta putting on great shows.
And do you think it's a problem that the UFC is just focusing on, do you think there's too much of a one-eyed vision of what the women's division is going to be like there at the moment, and just too much focus on Ronda? Or do you think they're going to broaden their horizons over time?
You know, I have no idea what they're planning to do. I think that they have done a great job promoting her, and, you know, they're starting to promote the other women in the division, and, you know, that's great for them. It's great for women's MMA. I really don't know what they have planned for the future, but to just stick with one weight class, I don't think would be wise.
And Jessica, I know you just a little bit about how you got into mixed martial arts yourself, because I know it was you didn't really plan on it being a career. You sort of just fell into it.
Yeah, the sport just kind of found me, and it was kind of a natural progression of things. I've always been an athlete. I played soccer, softball. I was on the swim team. I wanted to be on the wrestling team from high school, but, you know, there was a no girls allowed kind of policy. And after high school, I was looking to, you know, stay into athletics and stay competing. And I was really interested in, you know, jiu-jitsu, and I really didn't know where to look for it. So I went into a gym just for kind of cardio kickboxing. I kind of found my way through there, through people that, you know, train, compete. And it just kind of progressed from there. And, you know, after the first time I tried jiu-jitsu, I fell in love. And I just fell in love with training. And I really didn't have any direction or expectations of where to go. Mm. I just knew that I loved it. And I, you know, scheduled everything around training just because it made me so happy. So I love it.
It must have been an incredible feeling winning that world title without, you know, any sort of expectations. What was that feeling like, if you can sort of put it into words?
I can't even describe it, honestly. It was like a dream come true, but it was an unrealized dream. I never thought that I would be in that position. But I stayed steady and work hard, and, you know, my coaches and my training partners just, you know, kept supporting me, and I'm just thankful to be in the position, you know, with that opportunity. I'm very thankful for it, and I'm gonna, you know, do my best, train hard to keep it as long as I can.
And also, Jessica, have you noticed in the gym now that there's more girls getting into mixed martial arts now, and seeing it as a possible career, and seeing the long-term goals with role models such as yourself? Have you noticed more of a take-up in the sport by young girls in the United States?
Absolutely. I mean, there are a wide range of ages involved in, you know, in MMA, but a lot of girls I see jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
I see a lot of younger girls growing up, and they're also doing, you know, MMA, kids MMA programs, and pancreas programs are becoming very popular in the States. So it's crazy. I think that, you know, this next wave of younger kids coming in are going to be crazy athletes, and hopefully this sport is well developed enough for them to come into. But it's very popular, especially in Southern California, where I'm from. It's kind of like a mecca. Of MMA gyms and great, 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 great trainers and athletes, and it's just very popular here. it's pretty cool to see.
Jessica, when you started, did your friends and kind of family raise an eyebrow? And because of course, like, mixed martial arts, it used to have a kind of, people used to call it, like, you know, it was cage fighting and it was underground. Did people get weirded out when they told you what you were doing, kind of as the branding has changed of the sport?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, the branding has definitely changed. It's not just a tough person sport like it used to be, but you know, we're athletes and we're starting to be recognized as that, so it's really nice. When I first, you know, started, I really didn't, you know, I wasn't very vocal about it. I didn't tell my parents because I didn't think that they would approve, and the friends that I did have, I ended up losing a lot of friends because I completely changed my lifestyle.
Okay,
this is my lifestyle. I'm an athlete, and if they weren't supportive of it, you know, I would separate myself from that. But the friends that I do have are all my training partners and my teammates, and they're all very supportive. And the people that, you know, I've known from, you know, years ago that, you know that I'm getting into it are really stoked on it, and just very happy for me that I found something that I love.
And what was the sort of reaction from your friends? Because that's a, you know, it's obviously not an easy thing to go through when your friends leave you because you're actually competing in the sport. It must be very a very strange experience to go through.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, if I you know, put so much time and effort into it, they can either support me or you know, get left behind. Honestly, I love the sport, and it's done a lot for me. It's done a lot of positive things for me, and I wouldn't, you know, change that back.
Exactly.
Jessica, there seems to be a real camaraderie in a community around the Invicta Fighting Championships, and everyone seems to be very supportive, and Shannon Knapp's a great leader and kind of has a real vision for where she wants to bring the organization. Is everyone kind of friends behind the scenes and kind of knows what they want to do, and you're trying to sell a product together? What's the feeling now, and is it changing with time and as you're growing as an organization?
Shannon Knapp and Janet Martin are really great women, and I think I can speak for everybody when I say that we're so thankful for them and their efforts. I mean, if anybody was going to be able to make this show successful, it would be them, because it's been tried before and unsuccessful.
Yeah.
They really truly believe in the growth and the progression of the sport and the athletes in the sport. So it's an amazing feeling having, you know, these people as our, you know, leading the show and running everything. I kind of keep to myself. I'm a pretty quiet person, you know, at the shows and everything like that. But everybody's, you know, that I see is very friendly, and, you know, they're just thankful to be there. And, you know, they're all supportive of each other, even though we are obviously somewhat competitive against each other. There is a sense of camaraderie that I have noticed, which is really nice.
Definitely, she's done an amazing job, because we're here over in Ireland and we're still, you know, very aware of what's going on in Invicta Fighting Championships. Is there any advice, Jessica, you'd give to someone sort of in your sort of situation, as you said, when you got into the sport of mixed martial arts, how would they go about it, and should they follow their dreams, etc., if they really want to do it?
I just say, you know, if you really want to do it, well, there's a will, there's a way. Just stay focused on your goals, and you know, hopefully it'll lead you down the path that you want, and if it doesn't, then another door will open up and lead you to something else that you'll be successful in.
Awesome stuff.
I really believe that no efforts are wasted, so just try.
Exactly. Just getting back to the fight now against Michelle Waterson. You know, Michelle is obviously very experienced. What are you expecting from Michelle, and what do you think she's going to throw at you in order to dethrone you from your atomweight title?
You know, I never go into a fight with expectations, honestly. MMA is a very unpredictable sport, and I just train hard and try and be ready and prepared for anything that comes my way, wherever the fight goes. I know she's a tough girl. She comes from a good camp. I'm expecting to see the best version of herself that there is. So I'm going in with an open mind and ready for anything.
Do you vision how you want to finish the fight, or where you want to bring it yourself?
You know, I visualize a lot, but I don't really visualize how the fight's going to go. I just visualize at the end with my hand raised.
That's the only way.
Brilliant. Brilliant stuff. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, Jessica. Any sponsors, anything you'd like to plug before we wrap it up? Or anyone like to thank?
Yeah, just really, really fast, if I could, please.
No problem.
My coaches, my teammates at Ring Training Center, Kings MMA, Innovative Results, Black House, Ruka Apparel is a clothing brand that's a great sponsor to me. Vega Protein and Thrive Foods, which is the meal company that prepares my foods. Just, you know, thank you to everybody for their support.
Excellent stuff. Listen,
where can people find you on Twitter, Jessica?
Twitter is my name, Jessica Penne. Same with on Facebook and on Instagram.
Awesome making stuff. Listen, happy St. Patrick's Day from all the way here in Ireland. And listen, best of luck in, I think it's about 3 weeks' time, and I'm sure I'd like to talk to you again, see you in the future. Thanks a million, Jessica, for your time.
Thanks, Jessica.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
And that was Jessica Penny, the reigning Invicta FC Women's Atomweight Champion, who's going up against Michelle Waterson on April the 5th in Kansas City, Missouri, defending her belt for the very first time. So we're really looking forward to that here at Talking Brawl. It's going to be a smashing card, Mark. Mark, obviously we were supposed to talk to Michelle Waterson this week. We had a huge technical phone problems yesterday, so we couldn't, you know, get the interview on, but she's going to be joining us in a couple of weeks, hopefully before the fight.
It's some card, isn't it? Cyborg first fight back, you know, kind of, it's going to be pretty exciting. I hope that Shannon's got all the kind of the bugs out of the machine for the online pay-per-view, and they're now ready to deal with the demand.
I think what they're actually doing is they're actually streaming it live off Invicta, their own website.
Oh, cool.
With their own cameras, etc., and not going through Ustream and doing it some way to their own website.
Because it was Ustream's fault before, wasn't it? Because
Ustream or Livestream, I'm not going to say anything now. I get very confused the whole time, so we're not going to say anyone's name on that.
Yeah.
But it was obviously a mess the last time, and, you know, Shannon, as she is, a really cool, you know, fan friendly, just a really genuinely good person.
Yeah.
She gave everyone the free pay per view, which was awesome. Really,
it's called damage control and PR management, and she did it perfectly on the night. And I think a lot of people have got behind Invicta and wanted to succeed, and now the fact that they have the connection with the UFC and kind of throwing fires back and forth, even ourselves,
Mark. We obviously had an interest in women's mixed martial arts, but Shannon has put it in her face. We really want to see it now, because the level is so high of women's
Artists. It's a high level of promotional, and they've studied what's failed in the past, and they're trying to make something stretch. And there's something kind of nice about it, because it's about UFC 15, kind of, you know, it's evolving. It's at that point where it's not a big machine yet, and all the fighters are kind of out there trying to make a name for themselves, because they haven't got that huge kind of television platform yet. So there's something organic about Invicta, and that's kind of cool to you getting behind. You want to root for them.
We're big fans of it here. Obviously, we're looking to Cyborg's first fight as well. Sarah Kaufman, who's a UFC fighter, she's been signed by the UFC, but she's still remaining in this card. She's fighting against Leslie Smith. Jeez. And that just shows, I think, there is definitely a partnership between the UFC and Invicta Fighting Championship, which is great, because like Strikeforce obviously used to work with Invicta when they started off, so, you know, fantastic stuff. And you know, really good to talk with the first ever women's champion, reigning women's champion we've had on the show. So a real pleasure for us and an honour for us. So best of luck to Jessica Penne and Michelle Waterson in that fight on April the 5th. Marky.
So Niall, I hear you had a good old Niall's Pick'em contest on UFC on Fuel 8 there. You won your bet with Damon and
that was it. We heard earlier
Marky
on the
Hunt.
Show, if you're listening, exactly. I picked 4 of 6 on the main card.
I think I was right about all mine. I just can't remember. I don't want to blag or boast about it. You know,
we won't spend too long on this, because we've other stuff to get through to tonight. But you know, UFC on Fuel TV, I thought it was a great show in the Saitama Super Arena in Japan.
The Harlem Shake of Wanderlei Silva versus Stan was a bit
check that out on YouTube, man. That was awesome. But no, listen, you know, credit where credit's due. What a first round. Probably one of the best first rounds we'll see this year or in recent years. It was incredible. Slobber knocker guys, Stan and you know, Silva, and the stand up going, you know, hell for leather at each other. It was really, you know, back in Japan, let's do the old Pride Day sort of shizzle.
And but, credit to Stan as well, for actually, because you saw a switch flicking in his head where he went, okay, fuck it, I'm going to just fight the crazy Wanderlei Silva fight.
Stan's one of those guys, once he steps in the octagon, you know, it's all or nothing.
Yeah.
Obviously, I think something to do with his past experience, obviously, you know, being a war hero in the States. And, you know, really respect Brian Stan, a great character and a great guy for mixed martial arts to have. But Wanderlei Silva, you know, he's making a little bit of a comeback.
I wish he'd retire, though. Retire at the top. Stop.
It could be the right time to retire, because obviously we've seen him in the UFC and he's been nothing like his Pride days bar his last two fights, which has been very impressive.
Yeah.
Maybe let's have
one. Is he 7-2?
Oh, it's something
2
poor.
And 7. Two as in, like, that's what I mean, 2-7 when I say
not that bad. But maybe one more fight, see how he gets on. And I think let's call it a day afterwards if he loses his next fight. But if he wins, let's see what happens. Let him go on, you know, let it go, let the journey escalate a little longer. But you know, there was some but, and one thing I will say, the judging, Mark, was absolutely horrific yet again. Are you serious? I did call Diego Sanchez to win. It made me look good, but holy God, Takanori Gomi took that fight. And one judge gave Hector Lombard 29-28 victory over Yushin Nakami. Are you fucking shitting me, as Dana White would say? Sorry, get off the stage, guys. It's time to do something about fucking the judging in the UFC and in mixed martial arts worldwide. Disgraceful, shocking judging yet again, as we saw in London when I was over at that. And you know, clearly Matt Riddle dominated Che Mills for three fucking rounds, and one of the judges scored that fight in Che Mills' favour. You should be hung out and shot because there's something wrong with you. Two shocking instances of judging. Sanchez lost that fight, even though I did tip him to win. Made me look good. I don't give a shit.
I'm looking at this now because like, I had Gomi picked. I would have been 5-5 if Gomi had won that fight. Like, Diego Sanchez somehow has fans in these judging positions. I don't know how.
But just, how one of those judges scored that fight too?
No, sorry, Hector Lombard was much more insane. Like,
crazy.
You should. It's that thing when the judging is coming from a BJJ background or kind of from a boxing background and just doesn't recognize wrestling or grappling or just doesn't recognize other stuff. You have to understand all the disciplines, and if you don't, fuck it. Exactly. You know, you can't be judging.
Exactly. But actually, someone we've lined up to come on the show in the next few weeks, and hopefully we'll have him on, is Ricardo Almeida, who's obviously former UFC star, and now he's actually qualified judge.
Yeah.
So that would be great to hear what Ricardo has to say.
And that's what you need, people who can empathize with the fighters and understand.
It's a way forward, Mark, and hopefully we'll have Ricardo on in a few weeks and we'll talk about this and try and get to the bottom of this a little bit more.
Absolutely.
And sum it up. But you know, I really enjoyed that card, I have to say. It was a cracking card. Especially the last two fights probably really saved the card. But Hunty, hands up yet again. He's going to be fighting JDS now in a few weeks.
It's fucking mental.
The story goes on. The rally for Mark Hunt. Get behind Hunty.
Yeah,
we
but you notice he's saying now, fuck the rally for Mark Hunt. He just wants his fucking title fight. You know, because I mean, he doesn't want, like, you know, it's the
Mark,
fact that
Dana White said today, if he wins that, he's getting a shot.
I just think Mark Hunt would be the most amazing champion
ever.
It's
the Rocky story of mixed martial arts. The guy is a legend. He won the Pride. He's a Pride former Pride Grand Prix champion.
I'm so happy. I was about to do
or K1 champion.
I was
sorry,
about to try and Grand do a Mark Hunt accent and go Adrian at the same time, kind of, but it wasn't going to work.
That's not going to work. But yeah. Listen.
No, do you think it's going to happen? How do you think that DeSantis fight, because it seems like for Mark Hunt that is the perfect fight, like, you know, someone who is going to stand and bang with him. No fucking, like, you know, kind of, DeSantis has that apparent kind of, you know, apparently he is actually good at getting back to his feet, but does he have that jiu-jitsu ground game or kind of,
well, obviously Hunty doesn't, you know, he's not good off the back. We saw that Struve dominated him earlier
but that's the thing, I think that
was ring rust.
But I love Mark Hunt's corner as well. It's amazing. Just the things they say to him, it's fantastic. It's awesome. But Stefan Struve and Mark Hunt both did everything that they conceivably could to lose that fight. Like, they both went to the wrong places. Like, Mark Hunt seemed totally comfortable to go to the ground with him, and you were kind of going, what are you doing, just stand and bang with him, knock him out, you can fucking hit him in the face, it'll be grand. And that's what his corner was saying each time he got back to him, and he was kind of going, remember when was it, who came up to him, who was doing the post fight interviews and said
Gary Davies was it?
No, it was
Karen Bryant's.
They said to him, why were you feeling comfortable on the ground to bring him to the ground there with your wrestling on the ground? He was kind of like,
I'm sorry, it was John Anik.
John Anik, in the post place.
And he goes, yeah. But that's what you get with Hunty. You never know what you're going to get. He's a great guy.
He's
great
the best guy. Interview in the world because he's so crazy.
The best and the worst at the same time. But top guy.
Especially when you know he's doing it from the shitter.
Great card all round. And obviously another, it's a great week. New Zealand, Australian mixed martial arts from down under. Obviously we heard the Hulk Pilelli has been signed by the UFC last week. So another great addition to the Ultimate Fighting Championships heavyweight division. Marky, UFC on Fuel TV9. We are buzzing for this because Ireland's own Conor McGregor is the first UFC fighter on a long-term contract signed by the UFC. Obviously, we've had Tom Egan on in the past. Obviously, he was on the Dublin card at UFC 93, signed for one fight because I think you have to have a hometown guy in. But Conor is certainly the real deal. Obviously, we talked to Marcus Brimage a few weeks ago. If you listen to our show, if you don't, Schlinger hook. No, that's subscribe to us on iTunes.
It's a moment. Yeah. Well, no. We've already had a title fight, a title champion on the show tonight.
Yeah,
we couldn't have a UFC main
eventer. Of course,
eventer,
we do.
We
always do. We'd Stipe Miocic and fucking Nottingham.
No, we have one tonight as well.
We do indeed, Mark. Stop blowing our own trumpets here.
Sorry.
No, Mark. Seriously, we'll talk a little bit about this car before we wrap it up and get to the Gegard Mousasi interview, who is going to be coming on next. To Mark just sort of gave it away there. He's going to be facing off against Alexander Gustafsson in the main event in the Ericsson Globe Arena in Stockholm, Sweden. And guys, I believe all the tickets are gone. You can try UFC.com if you want, but I believe the show sold out in 2 hours about 3 months ago or whatever it was released. So
it's amazing, isn't it, the way Sweden, it's crazy. Become a real hotbed, isn't it?
And there's some good MMA websites over there. You've MMA Viking, and you've you know, some really, it's really, they're passionate about their stuff in Scandinavia. So we've Gunny from Iceland, who's trains with Conor the whole time, and he's a regular over here in SBG. But listen, Mark, for a country like Ireland, I think it's a massive, massive day for the sport of mixed martial arts come you know, April the 6th. I'm going to be over there at it in Stockholm. I can't wait for it, obviously. I'm going to be really excited, and I'm going to try not to be biased on press row, but we'll see what happens with that one when Conor comes out against Marcus.
Expect Niall to be jumping up and down with an Irish flag.
But listen, Marcus was a really, really top guy as well. He was so, it's sort of actually split motions.
Yeah,
here,
I know.
Marcus
is a dead
sound
guy. It's going to be tricky. Conor has said that he's going to kick the door down, and you know, kind of that's what he's hoping to do for, and drag the UFC back to Ireland, kicking and screaming. They should be here. They've released that fucking "Fight Me, I'm Irish" fucking T-shirt from the UFC. So maybe Conor's having an impact there already.
But it's going to be awesome. But see that, if you go to UFC.com, you'll see the T-shirts. Paddy's Day T-shirts being released in UFC Ireland.
Fight Me, I'm Irish.
Which is great, you know, for promotion of the sport in this country. We're all for that here, and you know, what way can you see that fight going? It's we're going to talk about it more. We've guys lined up.
I'm going to hold back.
We'll hold back next week.
Yeah, let's hold back for a few weeks.
We're 3 weeks out. We're just getting so excited, guys.
It's looming.
It's looming large.
It's
looming large. Do you remember that European Cup final, Mark? Looming large. Sorry.
We're slipping biases here. But we'll have to hide it for 21 episodes.
That's it. Listen, we're really looking forward to Sweden. And as we've started a build up to Sweden, this week we caught up with Gegard Mousasi. He goes up against Alexander Gustafsson in the main event in this Ericsson Globe Arena in Stockholm.
What a dude. What a journey to the UFC this guy's had. What a journey. Like, you know, he's fought everywhere. And it's sometimes interesting when you see people like we've...
Former Cage Warriors champ as well.
That's it. But
and sorry, speaking of Cage Warriors as well, big congratulations to Ireland's own Kyle Poundred from SBG, who won the Cage Warriors world title last weekend, and we'll be talking about that in a few minutes after the Gegard interview. But Mark, sorry.
I was just about to say that it's a real kind of eye opener when you see people who have to take the journey and build up against fighters. Like, he's fought everyone outside. Like, he fought Lombard and Mark and Hunty outside of the UFC, and it's
Fedor as well in
Fedor
K1
as well,
in K1.
Yeah. Jeez, like, you know, this guy, he's had those fights as learning experiences outside the UFC, and I think that's a really good thing for someone to develop outside. Like, there's a lot
he's
of guys
a former
now
Cage Warriors
champion yeah.
and a former obviously Strikeforce champion. He lost his belt to King Mo, light heavyweight.
Someone who's honest with himself and has had to grow as a fighter. He's a young guy. He's only 27, isn't he? But he's had a lot of fights under his belt. He's racked them up, and I think he's now ready for that big stage. And he's realistic about where he stands in the division. There's no bullshit with him, and really nice to see.
There's no bullshit. As we said, like, we've heard interviews in the past, and as we mentioned to him here, you know, he admitted to being, you know, a lazy kind of character, and, you know, wasn't very motivated, but you know, this is what we like. We like guys who come out and give you the truth. There's no bullshit about them. So
the weight cut is going well.
Best luck to him, and I'm really looking forward to this fight in Sweden. So guys, without further ado, we're going to get this interview with Gegard Mousasi, the dream catcher, Gegard Mousasi, and we'll catch you in a few minutes, guys. Cheers.
This is the Big Wheel, Sean Wheelock, and you are listening to Talking Brawls.
Delighted to say we're joined on the line now by Gegard Mousasi, who goes up against Alexander Gustafsson at UFC on Fuel TV 9 in Stockholm, Sweden on April the 6th. Gegard, first of all, thanks a million for your time, man, for taking the call. How are you keeping? How are things with you?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Gegard, what's it like to be going into your first UFC fight, and how has your camp been going? Is there any difference in mindset?
Well, I don't think much. I don't think a lot about fighting first fight in UFC or whatever. He has a home advantage, but I don't think about that either. I just don't worry a lot about UFC and fighting in Sweden. So that's a good thing. So I'm gonna go there. I'm just gonna fight. It's I don't think a lot about that, and that's a good thing for me, you know.
And Gegard, you said in your last Strikeforce fight in January, you said that you were going into the fight, you're under a lot of pressure about the whole situation with the UFC and Strikeforce. How different is the feeling going into this fight on a mental level? Is there a lot less pressure on you now that you're in the UFC and you have that contract?
No. You know. Training, some days I have really good days, I feel great, and some days I have bad days, I feel horrible, you know. So, you know, it's this fight, the training is not going exactly as I should, you know, but I deal with this in the past also, you know, and I had my best fights when the training wasn't going good, so I'm not worried about that, you know. I know I'm gonna be there at 6th of April, I'm gonna fight, you know. So I'm just I have good days, bad days, but eventually I know what I have to do, you know, and it does just fighting. So I'm gonna be there and I'm gonna fight.
And Gegard, you've described yourself as a lazy person by nature in the past. How is the motivation there for this fight? Are you feeling like you're really ready to go now at this stage?
Well, motivation, you know, I'm motivated to fight, you know, that's not the thing, but I had some difficulties mentally preparing for this fight. Things weren't going that great, I must say, but I feel like this last week I'm on the right track and I'm picking it up. You know, I took a couple days off to get my mind, give it some rest, and I picked up training and it's going great now. So I think the couple days rest, I needed that, you know. I think I was doing too much, you know. I'm very confident, you know. I feel like everywhere the fight go, I'm gonna be ready, you know.
Gegard, who have you been working with to replicate? Obviously, Alexander's reach is a big thing. Have you been using any different training partners going into this fight to replicate his style and size?
Well, I have working on Pat's on his reach. I training at Chakuriki. There's plenty of tall guys where I train with. So, kickboxing is good. I'm training with Frederick. He's working on my ground game. So ground and wrestling is going good. I got a boxing coach, Yopi. He's one of the best boxers from Holland, you know. So I feel more confident and more relaxed in my stand-up, you know. And I got my own strength and conditioning coach now that I'm working on. And so everything is falling into his place, you know. I'm going to be... So I have great coaches. I don't have any particular guy that's came in to replicate Gustafsson, but there's plenty of tall guys that I'm training with, so, and it's not going to be a problem, his reach.
And Gegard, I know you mentioned in the past that you weren't happy with the team and the guys around you. Now, at the moment, you're really reaping the benefits of, you know, having a new team around you, and they're getting all the motivation out, and, you know, and you're going to see the results come 3 weeks' time in Sweden.
Well, I'm always happy with the team that I have. You know, I'm lucky that I have great friends that are always helping me, you know. But I think I'm training more professional and I have better training trainers, you know. In the past, I was doing everything by myself and not pushing myself and stuff like that, you know. But now I have coaches in all areas and I'm working on those areas, you know. So I feel confident, more confident, and I know I'm better prepared going into the fight, you know.
And Gegard, I know you've worked over with Dan Henderson in Team Quest in the past in the States. Have you focused? Has this camp entirely been in the Netherlands?
Yeah. You know, I'm for this fight, you know, I don't come anything short here in Holland, you know. It's a matter of choosing the right places to train and getting the right persons that can get you to the next level. So I don't feel necessarily I have to go to US. I know a lot of people think that way, but they don't know that, anything about the sport. So it's the opinions of the fans. But I know the best way to prepare and the best, you know, I'm fighting a long time. I had many different experiences with trainers. I was trained almost everywhere, every trainer I trained. So I have a lot of experience, and I know I don't come short, you know. It doesn't mean you have to be necessarily in U.S. to get better, you know. If you're a fighter, you can train in Russia, in Moscow, you can train even in the desert or everywhere, you know, as long as you have the mental, you know. The guy Alexander, he was one of the best wrestlers, the big guy from Russia. He was training in what's the area in Russia that really not a lot of people live?
Dagestan or Siberia?
Siberia, yeah. And he was one of the best, you know. Yeah. You have to think it's not always where you train, you know. So I feel confident where I train. It gives me a lot of comfort, and I think that's the best thing for me, you know.
And Gegard, has Uncle Dana had a word in the ear, or has anyone said anything? There's been a lot of talk that the winner of this fight was going to get a title shot. Has anything been told to you about this in advance of the fight?
Well, what I know and what I hear is I'm not going to get a title shot, and I think it's logical, you know. Okay. It's my first fight in the UFC. People don't know me in UFC, and so I think I have this fight and I have another fight, I feel like I could get a title shot, but I feel I need one more fight after this before I get a title shot, or maybe even two. I don't care, you know. I have eventually to fight everybody, so that's my goal, you know, to be the champion. I don't wanna, who cares if the belt is on the line or not? I have to fight them anyway.
And Gegard, are you prepared for a raucous evasion to play the bad guy when you come into Alexander's hometown?
I'm a nice guy, you know. I don't need to play the bad guy. They're not gonna pay me more if I play the bad guy or the good guy. It's not gonna make any difference. I don't need to promote anything, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna go there and do my job.
Are you prepared for this fight now, weight wise, with the travel?
No. It's actually even better because the travel is maybe 2.5 hours.
Yeah. Oh,
it's
right.
In Europe, you know. So that's gonna be relatively easy for me than 11-12 hours in a flight. I don't have to worry about jet lag. So I have some advantages there, and so I'm not worried about those things.
And Gegard, just a couple of more questions before we wrap it up. Just what's your opinion? I know you're originally born in Iran, in Tehran. What's your opinion on the European fighters at the moment, the guys of like Tariq Safadin, and we have our own Irish Conor McGregor here coming through now in the UFC. The fighting over this side of the pond has really, really improved and got to that sort of next level. Just what's your thoughts on the European fighters?
Well, you know, I think you don't have a big organization in Europe. You know, there's plenty upcoming guys maybe, but, you know, in U.S., MMA is a much higher level, you know. So, of course, in Brazil, it's picking up also. Like, the market is big there, you know. If the market was big in Europe, they would produce even better fighters, you know.
Yeah.
So that's the thing, I believe. It's the market is in U.S., so you have more everyone. MMA is everywhere on TV, so you have people seeing it. They're gonna train, so you have more people doing MMA. So you're gonna have better fighters there coming from U.S. or Brazil, you know. And Europe is not really a fighting country, you know. West Europe is more, you know, is not. They're not famous for fighting, you know. You have some countries that England, Germany, you know, they have good boxers, you know. And Middle East, East Europe, I believe they're more into fighting, you know. But West Europe is, you know, they like other sports. They like soccer, they like ice skating, I don't know, you know. they're not really into fighting, the people, you know. It's just nature, you know.
This fight going well, is there anyone else in your eye line who you want after this fight to climb that ladder? You were ranked number 10 in the first rankings.
You know, I'm focusing on this fight, you know.
Yeah.
But I hear Machida wants another fight before he fights for the title. I think that's what he said. I think that would be a good matchup, you know, if I beat him. Awesome. That would be great for me, you know. But that's later on, you know.
Yeah.
But he's the number one guy, so, and Gustafsson is also one of the number one guys. So if I beat him and I beat the other one number one guy, so, you know, it makes sense, you know. For me, that would work out, you know. But first, this fight, we go from that.
Yeah. Dana seems to like what you have to say anyway, because you call out Gustafsson on the MMA era with Ayer Helwani and you got your wish. So hopefully things work out for you. So listen, Gegger, what way can you see this fight going? What's going to happen on April the 6th in the Ericsson Globe Arena in Stockholm?
You know, he knows I'm going to get bring the fight to him. You know, I'm the guy going to go forward and he's gonna be the guy that's going to go backwards, you know. I don't think that's a secret. You know, everything, I'm going to take advantage of any situation. So ground, takedown, stand up, I'm going to bring the fight to him. We're going to have a good fight, you know. I think the matchup is a good matchup, you know. I don't think it's going to be a boring fight, and that's the most important thing, you know.
Any final words for Alexander Gustafsson before we let you go?
No, I don't have anything to say to him, you know. I think he's a nice guy, he's a good fighter, and we're going to fight, you know.
Brilliant
that's
stuff.
It.
Excellent. Listen, really appreciate your time. And just before we let you go, is there any sponsors or anyone you'd like to thank?
Yeah, Venom. I signed with Venom and they're taking care of me, so I want to thank them. And I have some other sponsors, but my manager is working on them. But, you know, I don't know.
Brilliant stuff. Where can your fans find you on Twitter?
It's Gegard _ Musasi MMA. I don't know exactly.
Yeah. I think it's Gegard _ Musasi. Anyway, listen, Gegard, thanks a million for your time, and we really appreciate it. And best of luck on April the 6th, and hopefully we'll get to see you over there.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
And that was Gegard Musasi, the dream catcher, Gegard Musasi. He goes up against Alexander Gustafsson at UFC on Fuel TV in Stockholm at the Ericsson Globe Arena on April the 6th. Of this year. Can't wait for that. I'm going to be over at that. So make sure you stay and stick listening to us and Talking Brawls. Hopefully the website might be up by then.
There'll be a lot of coverage coming up for it now. It'll be big time, big scale. This is the big event. This is the big
especially
one for Europe now.
Especially in this country, in Ireland.
Yeah.
Obviously with Conor making his debut against Marcus the Bama Beast for Image. But you can catch us obviously on Facebook at facebook.com/Talking Brawls Mixed Martial Arts Podcast, on Twitter at Talking Brawls and at Mark Moriarty 101.
He's at Noel McGrath4.
And if you want to get in direct contact with us, you can catch us at talkingbrawls@gmail.com. Mark, obviously we're pumped. We're not going to say any more about UFC on Fuel TV 9, so we're seriously pumped about that. But we have to mention, we've had him on the show last episode. Yeah, it was. Carl Pendred. Big congratulations to Carl Pendred. He's mentioned the new Cage Warriors welterweight world champion, defeating Gael Grimaud by unanimous decision at the HMV Forum in Kentish Town in London. So, you know, big congrats to SBG, John Kavanagh, all the guys, Gunnar Nelson, who helped train him, Chris Fields, everyone. Great year for the guys at SBG in Ireland. Mark, how good was Carl on the night?
Another belt on the wall and a really impressive performance, a really mature performance from Carl. It was one of those. Gael Grimaud, didn't he beat Jesse Taylor last time out, didn't he?
It was about two or three years ago, my head's gone, sorry.
Gael Grimaud's an established champion, and it's another belt on the wall for SPG, and another notch on the title for Ireland at the moment. For Irish MMA, it's growing as fuck, and we have champions, to say the least. Like Conor's going to go out there into the main stage now and see if he can kick the door down. It's a tough division to be in welterweight, though, you know, for Carl.
Yeah.
You know, concept of going over, it's like Cage Warriors is fantastic, but Jesus, like when you see Weltermania like is happening this weekend, which
some
of the people who are fighting.
It's unbelievable division.
Stacked.
I think Carl's going to have at least one more fight in Cage Warriors before he does get over to the UFC.
Young lad.
He's 25 years old. There's no rush. He's time is on his side. We're about 30.
I'm 29 now.
Sorry, you're 31.
I'm a child.
31.
I'm a child.
Shut
I'm
up,
a child. Fuck.
You're my bitch. No, he can't talk now, guys.
Okay. Fuck you.
But Awesome performance, great stuff. And obviously we had Redzer on the show, Paul Redzer-Redmond, who came off a great win against Alexi Roberts, and well done to him. And Alan Philpott as well, who came off a great victory against Liam James. Second round stoppage there for both guys. Fantastic stuff for Cage Warriors as always. Top show, and you can catch them on Twitter as well, and you know, hit them up, because it really is, we love it. You can watch them on joe.ie and mmajunkie.com for non-Irish
viewers.
Listeners, or whatever you want to call it.
It's kind of crazy, isn't it, this weekend? It's like, because we have Paddy's Day, we have to stay up till about 5 o'clock in the morning.
There's the rugby
watch
on,
this.
We have Premier League, there's UFC, it's golf, there's fucking everything on, man.
Well, this is the thing, that if the UFC finishes in the way that I think it's going to, with a GSP grueling, grinding performance, winning five rounds style, this is going to be a 5 a.m. finish, and kind of waking up to drink at about 10 a.m. or something.
Probably will on Paddy's Day, and I've actually a new my sister's going to have one of my other sisters having a kid on Paddy's Day. She's due, so it's going to be a nightmare. There's going to be drink all around. So
how'd you get to a hospital? Is she in
She's due on Paddy's Day, she goes like 2 or 3 days.
She's like fucking
it's a terrible thing to say.
Have you ever tried to get around town in fucking Ireland, Dublin, Ireland on fucking Paddy's Day?
It's a nightmare.
That's why we're not recording a Paddy's Day special. We'll call this the Paddy's Day special.
This is the Paddy's Day special.
Yeah, of course.
It's all special when we're around.
Yeah, it's
always
special.
With you.
Done right, yeah. Ho ho! Shortle, I am indeed. Me hole, yeah.
but guys, obviously tonight I'd love to, you know, thank Damon Martin, who always helps us out in the show, and he's great, you know. Unbelievable knowledge from Damon yet again.
And he lives in Dublin, Ohio.
And Dublin,
an Irish
Ohio.
Person.
And we're from Dublin, Ireland. So it's going to be a good Paddy's weekend, I feel.
MMA here. Brothers.
MMA brothers. So Damon's the shortest. Yeah, he owes me a pint as well. Apparently I'm a better tipster than him. Boop. That's what he said. He said it. His words. I owe a few at this stage and all. But no, listen, Damon, top man as always. And check him out on the Bleacher Report now. And let's hope to see him and Jeff Kane back on again, because it's a great show. And also like to thank obviously Jessica Penny, and best of luck to her in her title defence in 3 weeks' time. And also on the show we had Gegard Mousasi, top gentleman, a really nice guy, and we'll be talking to him, I'm sure, over in Stockholm.
Yeah, main event. Damn right.
So from main event, Moriarty.
I was about to say it there as well. From the McGraldo.
No, the magician McGrath. it's a very, very happy Paddy's Day from here in Dublin, Ireland. So from Mark Moriarty and myself, it's good luck and good night. Cheers, guys.
We can start drinking now. Way. Boom.